So this is good evening. So this is really a continuation from 2 weeks ago. So where we discussed the issue of min hamukaf. So here in Shin Chaf Hey, Siv Beis, right in the middle of the page here, it had the issue of if you have two batches of dough that are both meant that both could be mafresh challah on them. So to take challah off of one and not the other, so that is a little questionable. Now, the Shulchan Aruch here in Shin Chaf Hey Siv Vav seems to say explicitly that it's okay, right? The Shin Chaf Hey Siv Beis says, Im yesh b'chol isa kishir, if you have in each isa ishir, v'rotza lahafrish mizu alzu, and you want to separate from one for the other, I mean, take off of one and have it count for both, ein tzarech lo tziruv kli v'lo negia, el kevin sh'shteim l'fanav mafrishim mizu alzu. So you don't need them to touch each other, you don't need them to be in the same kli, so long as they are in front of you, so then that would work. That's what it says in Sif Beis. Now, we discussed last time, we went through the Gra, how the Vilna Gaon on the bottom says, no, that's not exactly what the Rama means, the Shulchan Aruch means. The Shulchan Aruch only means that under certain circumstances, if they're both in front of you, but if they're both in separate kalim that are separate, and certainly if they're both sealed, so he brings makaros, he brings sources to say that that is not considered to be mukaf, that's not considered to be combined. And it sounds like you would not be able, and it sounds like from the way the Gra spells it out, that you would not be able to be mafrish one for the other. So that, of course, is a problem for the tevel do system that we have been discussing, right? That if you, the way that it's set up is that you have a frozen piece of dough, you stick it into a closet, you know, into the freezer, and you leave it there, and you use your mafrish off of that every day for whatever dough is being made, right? That's the way that the tevel dough system works. So according to this, it seems like that would be a problem because that is low, that they're not mukaf, they're not considered to be combined. The one that's in the freezer is in a sealed bag, the one and beyond that is in a freezer, right? And what you're using is not in the freezer, right? It's out in the open. So that seems like that should then be a problem. So how does that work? How are we then... how are we then okay with it? So one possibility, actually, that is first of all, so is this accepted? So on the pages that I sent, I believe there is. So we have from Hilchos Matzah again, right? Because there seems to be there's certainly a matzah, a challah component to the mitzvah of matzah, and to the point that it gets its own siman. In Shulchan Aruch Aruch Chaim. So it's good to have anything with Hilchos Pesach on the top is good to have open this time of year. So here we go. So the Shulchan Aruch there talks about the separation of challah, and in the Mishnah Berurah on the bottom, in Mishnah Berurah Vav, he says, Achar Afia Miyad Sheyitein. So that after the Afia, immediately, this is with regards to the matzah, right? So then at that point you would put that in like a basket. I was saying, so achar afia miyad sheyitein kol hamatzos b'sal, ba'asal mitzarfam, that you put all the matzahs and take all the matzahs that come out of the oven, you put them together in a basket, and the basket is then able to combine them, right? So that is the ideal. And if you take a look at some of the Shmura Matzah Factory videos that are out there, so that's what's done. It comes out of the oven, and it gets put into these like milk crates, like somewhat large milk crate type things, and they sort of line them up on their side, and then they're all put together, and you're able to mafresh challah from that. So the Mishnah Berurah says, "Ra'af b'challah chutz la'aretz kein," that this idea that it needs to be put into a basket afterwards, that even is applicable to challah chutz la'aretz. "Ra'af b'gav de b'challah chutz la'aretz the ochel v'holik mishayer k'sas l'challah," right? And even though we're in the Mishnah Berurah here in the second wide line on page Nun Dalet, which is the second or third, I realize maybe it's the third page in the source sheets, but even with regards to Chalas Chutz La'aretz, where the Ochel V'Holich U'Mishayer Ktsas L'Challah, where you're able to consume some of it and leave some over for Challah, I mean, you're allowed to eat before the Challah is separated, Hainu bi'isa achas gedol, that's with one piece of dough. Avagav shenis chalka achar kach l'kama kach kikaros, even though it's divided up later on into separate rolls. So kevan shenis chalku, kevan shet chilasan hayu mechubar, and that because originally they were connected, mi'isa achas, hikilu b'chutz la'aretz l'lo bi'inan mukaf, that we don't require mukaf in that case, u'mechubar b'shas hafrasha. as opposed to here, shehem isas mechulakos, where they are separate doughs. Avshay menachem pam achas basal, even though they might have been put together one time in a basket, mikol makom lo havi kechibur gamur lahakil lechol kodem hafrasha. We're not going to be so makil as to say that you can eat it before hafrasha. Even if each one had the amount of challah, gam kibin shehem in a mukaf, it would need to be combined together as we described. So what's going on here? So Mishabur really is implying a question from the Ramah that we learned a couple of weeks ago. That the Ramah earlier, and I forgot what exactly is the exact order of the source sheet, this might be page 2, but the Ramah at the end of Shin Chav Gimel talks about that, it talks about this halacha, that if you realize that you haven't separated challah, you're allowed to, and it's Shabbos, right? You're allowed to eat the challah. You're allowed to eat the bread and leave over some in order to be mafresh challah later on. So some poskim turn around and say, "Well, hey, wait a second, what's going on there, right? I thought when you separate challah, it has to be min hamukaf. It has to be from a collected group, and if you have already eaten a significant part of the bread, so guess what? It no longer is part of the group, right? If it is in your stomach, right, if we're going to consider a thing of dough in the freezer to be considered separate from that which is in front of me, so that which is already inside of me is going to be considered to be separate from what is in front of me. So therefore, it seems like that would not be considered to be min hamukaf." So that's what the Mishnah Berurah here is building on. So he's dealing with our issue that we're raising. He's saying, wait a second, why are we saying that all needs to be mina mukaf? Maybe that doesn't apply to chalas chutzal aretz. Right? Maybe it doesn't, right, where there's all sorts of kulas anyways, because we see that with chalas chutzal aretz, you're allowed to separate challah, even though a lot of the bread has already been consumed. So if you're allowed to separate challah for bread that's already been consumed, so certainly you'd be allowed to separate bread for off of dough that is sitting in the next room, right? That seems like that should be okay. So the Mishnah Berurah here is explaining that not necessarily the case. He's saying that halacha that we learned previously that you can separate challah when it is after it's already eaten, that is when it is from one dough together. Right here, it's considered to be from separate doughs, and therefore that's not going to be okay. That sounds somewhat arbitrary. So it sounds like what the Mishnah Berurah is driving at is that you need one of the two. I mean, the halacha is, right, the halacha of separating challah, right? If you open up a chumash and you open the Parsha Shlach and it talks about separating challah, it talks about separating challah, separating truma mina isa. I don't have the exact words in front of me, but it talks about separating. Right, the pasuk says. There you go. So in Parsha Shlach, it says, "Tarimu truma laHashem rishisa chalat tarimu truma k'truma." It's going to keep me with some rishisa risosichem titnu laHashem truma. So it needs to be from a collected group. So at some point, there needs to be mukaf. So if it's all doughed up together, right, if it's mixed together and it's a dough at some point, and now, right, so that's considered to be mina mukaf, and then the halacha is that if I already ate part of it, I'm allowed to separate challah. But if it was never combined together, so then you're not separating from that dough. At no point is it mixed together with the challah that you're taking off from it. So it could be, if that's the case, the Mishnah Berurah would say, even challah chutzal aretz, it's not going to work, it's not going to be challah. So that puts us into a bind, right? So now that becomes a problem. So wait a second, does that mean that this whole tevel do system is doesn't work, right? Because it's not mina mukaf. So the next Mishnah Berurah is a little helpful, and then there's a Sha'aretz Tzion here that clears things up a little, sort of. So the Mishnah Berurah here in Siv Zayin says bisal, right? So that's the bottom here, bisal. The misal gadol. So if it is a large basket. Going on to the next page, tzarech lekarvam sheyagiu zebizet. So you want to bring it so that they actually touch one another. Im yesh b'chol isa shir chala. If there is in each isa a shir chala, the pasak harama lekame de in tsarach tziruf sal huah de negiyah lahadadi. Meaning they don't have to touch one another. Lo tsarach bein kashem unachim besal bein shem unachim bevayis da bayis mitzarfim v'yachol lahafrish mizal ze. Fine. That if they're all in a house together, that's fine. But if they're in a basket, so then you need the basket to combine them. So v'zehu dafka kashem unachim below kalim. He says this whole thing that if it's in the house, that works to combine them. That's if they're placed there, not in any vessels. Avalim hei munachim bekelim. If they're placed in kelim, then you have to have the kelim touching one another. The yiyu pesuchim lamala. And if they're open above, right? The im heim stumen. Plus, if they're sealed, the Mishabura says afilu heim mikuravim lo mahani. Even if they're touching one another, it's not going to work. They have to actually be in the same yad. Like that's what we discussed last week, right? That the Shulchan Aruch just says that if it's in the same house, that's okay. And that's what the Gra said. Well, that if they're in separate, if they're in kelim, so then the kelim have to actually be together. And if they're in sealed kelim, so then they actually have to be open to one another, right? So they actually have to be connected. So that's what the Mishnah Berurah here is saying, right? If they're sealed, I feel him mikuravim lo mahani. Now, if you take a look though at the bottom of the page, the Shar HaTzion, Yud Gimel on the bottom of the Mishnah Berurah here, he says, right? Because deze lo mikre mukaf, right? If they are sealed kalim, so even if they're close to one another, it's not going to work because that's not called mukaf. But then the Shar HaTzion says, however, but just notice v'dafka l'charchila. He says, one second though, this is specifically really a din l'charchila. So even though this, you get a lot of anxiety from reading this gra and saying, well, it needs to be mina mukaf. How are we going to make sure that it's mina mukaf? It has to be collected together, and how is this going to work? So the Shar HaTzion says, by the way, this whole thing is only l'charchila. Right? Aval b'di'evet, afilu kol kli munach b'vayis acher. Even if you have the kli someplace else, the hifrish mizel zen, you separate for this on that one, mahani, that works, kevin sh'yesh b'chol isa kashir. Because then you have in each isa the shir, din yin mukaf hu rak mitzvah l'chachila, k'mavir b'yuradeya simen shin chafei. If you look here, right, if you look in the yuradeya simen shin chafei, so then you'll notice that this whole thing is a din l'chachila, and it's not an issue b'di'evet. Okay, so our tevel do system is saved, but only on a level of bidyavet. Now, first of all, by the way, I'll point out one thing here. At the end of the Shar HaTzion here, he said, right, kashir de inyan mukaf hu rak mitzvah l'chadchila, as we see in Yerideya Simen Shin Chafei. So Yerideya Simen Shin Chafei is our Simen, right? That's what we've been learning. So I quickly took a look back and said, really, it was l'chadchila? I don't remember being l'chadchila. Here I've been having heartburn for the last 2 weeks, wondering about our Tevel Do system. And lo and behold, it's only an issue of l'chadchila, it's not an issue of b'di'evit. So I looked through Shulchan Aruch, and I didn't see where it said anywhere that this is only a din l'chadchila, not b'di'evit. It didn't seem like that is coming. I didn't see that here. So I meant to put this on the source sheet. So I took a look in the Chelkas Binyamin here. So in the Chelkas Binyamin, so he quotes that Shar HaTzion, and he quotes at the end and says, and the Shar HaTzion said, oh, take a look in Shulchan Aruch Simen Shin Chaf Hei, and the Chelkas Binyamin says, I don't really know what he's talking about in Simen Shin Chaf Hei. Right? He says, so Baruch Shekivanti, figured that out. That here in his tzionim, he says here, mihu lo yadati kavanaso b'mashakasov shekim mivur b'yordeya simin shin chafei. I don't really know what he meant when he said that this is found in simin shin chafei. So, okay, fine. So it's unclear from the Shulchan Aruch itself if he ever passes that way. So that made me feel better that at least I didn't totally miss that fact. But where is he getting it from? Is that correct? Is that true that this is only a din l'charchila and not a din b'di'eved?
Well, even if it was, you can't set up your kashrut organization with a b'di'evet.
Okay, very good, very good. We'll get to that. Very good. Yes, that is the big issue. But let's just figure out how we know that this was a din b'di'evet. So I think the next next on the list is a page from the. What's it called? From the Derech Emunah, from Rav Chaim Kanievsky's Derech Emunah.
I have Yoredeya.
Oh, that's the previous. That we did that already. That's the thing about the about that if you eat it already, that's apparently still considered to be mina mukaf. That's that page. But here, yeah, there we go. So in the Rambam in Hilchos Bikurim. So I think I saw it someplace, right? You see where it says Hilchos Bikurim Parakei?
Yeah.
So this is that's a page from the Derech Emunah. That's Reb Chaim Kanievsky's Sefer, right? So the top of the we've seen this already a bunch. I actually was in Capital Svarim last week. Last Monday night when I had this chasana in Lakewood, so I stopped by this place, Capital Sarm. It's a used bookstore in Lakewood. There's actually two of them, and one of the things I had in mind to take a look for is if they had any Derech Emunahs there. And lo and behold, I found one, volume one, which had Hilchos Kalayim in it, and maybe it has Hilchos Trumos also. I don't remember. It has the beginning. So I started my collection of Derech Emunahs. But until then, take advantage of the fact that it is on Hebrew books and Otzer HaChachma, etc., and the Bar Ilan. So Perek Hei Yud Gimel. So this is the Rambam. The Rambam says Hachala Nikris Truma Lefichach Enu Nitlis Elamina Muka. That Chala is called Truma. Therefore, it's going to have the same dinim as Truma, and therefore it should only be collected Min HaMukaf. That it should only be collected from something that is surrounded. Ketruma. And nor should you be taking tahor stuff for tameh stuff. L'chat chila. So Rambam adds a line at the end. Right? This halacha seems to only be an issue l'chat chila. So Rambam put those words in. Now, if you take a look at the Derech Emunah here, kuf chav tes l'chat chila, aval b'dieved gam truma mahani. The b'dieved, the truma would work. Right? So this is the Derech Emunah where it says kuf chav tes, about halfway down the skinny lines, the skinny lines on the Derech Emunah side. As we see earlier in Perek Hei of Trumos, Halacha Zayin. And then he talks about how you compare, how Chala is compared to Truma. Oh, okay, that's good. So take a look there. And through this, that Rambam actually sends you to the original source of this is really a Mishnah. So the Mishnah is in Trumos. So I think that's the next page in the source sheet. So the Mishnah in Trumos here, I put the Kahati up. So the Kahati there says this din, that you're not allowed to take truma from tahor stuff for tummy stuff. Vim tarmu, and if you did, trumas and truma. It does work. At the end of the day, it would work b'dievet as being okay. And he says, and he gives examples, b'emas amro igil shel tevela shenit meis miksa. So if you have a fig cake, that part of it became tamei, torim minat tahor sheyeshbo al tamei sheyeshbo. You could be torim from the tahor stuff on the tummy stuff. V'chein agudah shel yarak. And same too with these other things. Now, if you had two fig cakes, however, or two agudos, or two aremos, I'm not sure how to translate these exactly, but one's tummy, one's tahor, you should not take truma from one or the other. Rabbi Elazar, however, says, tor min atar al tummy, that you actually could. However, if you... However, this is all based off of the beginning of the Mishnah. And in the beginning of the Mishnah, right, so where it says Truma's Truma, so there he says, Vim Tarmu, if you did it, from the Tahor on the Tummy stuff, that's considered good Bidi Evet. Right? And therefore, this whole thing is really only a Gezerah, that maybe the Tummy is going to touch the Tahor, and therefore we want everything to be on the same level, and therefore this is really only a Geder Durabanan. The Kahati quotes from a Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says it's possibly learnt out from Sukkim, so the question whether maybe it's Doraisa, maybe it's not. But here already in the Mishnah, this is really the source, meaning the Mishnah, the Chal is really learning out from Truma, and Truma is learning out from this Mishnah in Trumos, where it discusses the idea of Mukaf, and there the Mishnah is pretty clear that this is only a din l'chachila and not a din b'diyev. Okay, so with regards to the back to the Tevel Do system, so I, or conservative, not in front of me, yeah, that's only an issue with Achila, it's not a problem B'di'evin. So, however, Dr. Horowitz says, I don't want to be eating from a b'dieved kashrus organization. I want things being done l'chadchila, right? What's going on here, right? You drive us crazy with so many other things, making sure it's l'chadchila. Why all of a sudden here are we taking? Do we seem to be taking a pass on it? So Rabbi Cohn, in his sefer, actually develops bases this off of an entire sugya. Before we cover his sugya, I'll give you my quick answer on that is that when it comes to the in the kashrus world, right, I've like come to this realization, like there's a couple, you run into a couple of problems here, right, in terms of who are you advising, who do you work for when you're running a kashrus organization? Do I work for the caterer, or do I work for the consumer, right? And so that's like one sort of like big question. Meaning, am I the representative of the members of the community, right? I'm their eyes, right? Or am I advising to the company how they should be doing things? So like that plays into things that are like b'di'evad l'chathila, things like that. So I think I shared this example before a couple of years ago. I think my first Pesach on the job. One of our places, House of Kosher. This ends up being a pretty. They come out looking good in this story, but they called me. It was a week and a half or so before Pesach, and they called me up and said, "Gevalt, we just realized that we've been using canola oil, right? So canola oil is known to be kitnios, whether it really is kitnios, whether it should be known to be kitnios, whatever. But in the world, it is known as being kitnios. From what I understand, canola oil and cottonseed oil are actually very similar, perhaps the same thing. Main thing is canola oil comes from Canada, right? Hence the word name canola oil, right? So they called me up and says, "Gevalt, we have been and cottonseed oil is considered to be fine, so it's whatever. But the minhag has become that canola oil is out and cottonseed oil is in. So they call me up and say, we've already done cooking for a day and a half, and we realize that we've been using canola oil the entire time, right? So what do we do now? So one is, what about, do they have to kosher all their stuff and stuff like that? So that the answer would be yes, but what about the stuff that they already made? So I happened to be there in the store. I was actually like going up to the store anyway. So I said, like, hold on, I'll be there in 40 minutes, we'll discuss it. So I get up there, happens to be Rabbi Tarabello, who's from the Northeast. So he was one of the Rabbanim in the Northeast. So he happened to be there at the time. He's on our kosher spot. So I take him to the back and we say, okay, what's the story? He shows me, this is what happened. And Rabbi Tarabello whispers into my ear, he says, kitnios is batel berov, right? That if it's nullified to the minority, you don't need shishim to override the kitnios. You just have to have majority to override the kitnios. So if you have a piece of chicken, right, that has some oil on it, right? That oil is technically batel to the chicken, right? So technically it is mutter lechatchila to eat on Pesach, right? So. Right, even though there's kitnios on it, it's already mixed together. So now it's mixed together. So it's a piece of chicken rather than kitnios and chicken together. So so what do we do with that? So I actually made a couple of calls that day. I remember I actually spoke with Rabbi Ganak himself. Rabbi Ganak told me that he thought al pi halacha I'm right, but al pi choshen mishpat I'm wrong. Right, I'm sorry. Al pi choshen mishpat, he said you would have to notify people that that's what happened. I mean, you would have to. So he's essentially saying, yeah, we can. Meaning, put a sign up saying this is kosher lechatchila to be eaten by members of our community, but just you should know it was cooked in canola oil. Right? In which case, who in the world is going to take it? Right? And one of the other rabbis for a different organization told me, and this in my colloquialisms has become known as the Mrs. Goldstein rule. What is the Mrs. Goldstein rule? That if Mrs. Goldstein would ever find out what you were doing, she would be furious at you. Right? So whether kosher mishpat-wise, one could argue on Rabbi Ganak a little bit and say, what do you mean? It's kosher to eat. Why do I have to alert people as to all the details? Meaning, it does happen that there's some kind of mistake somewhere. And at the end of the day, that it's okay l'chatchila to eat the thing. Right? So we don't necessarily have to tell people all of those different times when something is okay. So here also, look, we say it's kosher, so why do I have to tell you that it's made from canola oil? But as one of the people from another organization said, if Mrs. Goldstein ever found out, who's Mrs. Goldstein? Mrs. Goldstein is the colloquial Mrs. Goldstein, right? If she would ever find out what happened, she'd be furious at you. So for that reason, that should justify not keeping it. And truth is, they ended up, even before we gave an answer, Rabbi Isaacson called me and said, I don't care. I'm not dealing with this. We're putting all this stuff away. All the stuff we made already, we're going to put in the freezer. It's going to be fine. We're going to start cooking tonight. We're going to kosher cook tonight and just start fresh. And which was a challenge, meaning it meant pretty much, I think they worked all night then. I remember he sent me a text at like 1 in the morning, like, okay, we finished this, we're on to the site, whatever. But that was the decision that was made there. So that like sort of raised this question in my head as, so who do we work for, right? Am I telling the agent, the establishment, this is kosher l'chachila, and now you could sell it. Or am I on behalf of the people, right? It's l'chachila for the establishment, but it's b'dievet for the customer, right? So how do you exactly do you play that out? So that's like been my hakira for a long time. I've gotten a few ideas onto how to spell this out. I think it actually worked more for the establishment than we do for the customer. But that is the that's one issue. So.
I checked canola oil online on the Google search.
Yeah.
Oh, it's interesting. It's a Canadian, as you said. Beautiful small yellow flowers which develop into pods resembling pea pods.
Right.
Each pod has tiny black seeds, about 45% oil in each seed.
Right.
So it looks a little like peas, I guess. Which
right.
Could be one. I mean,
right, but it's not much different. Really. Like all this stuff is new stuff. So you know, Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he says that anything that didn't exist in the old country shouldn't be considered kitnios, was obviously yeah. There's no minhag on it. So the problem is, you go around with that psak, so you're going to be thrown out head first, right? I mean, that means peanuts should be okay. That means corn should be okay. That means right, and we don't assume it that way. So whatever. So that
well,
so
how can it be for the customer and bid the edit for the caterer? How does that work?
No, the other way around. Meaning for the caterer, it's l'chachila because they dropped a little bit of chicken soup. Let's say they dropped a little chicken soup into the macaroni and cheese, right?
Mm.
So they're allowed to eat it. But the customer, I mean, that's not necessarily the best. That's not necessarily the best example. But because that's already nullified already. But from the customer's
yeah.
perspective, in this case, it's the canola oil. Meaning, is it, would I tell the customer that, I mean, if they have a choice in front of them of buying canola oil food or cottonseed oil food, and they're right there in front of them, so I'd probably tell them, okay, buy the cottonseed, like, why would you do it? But, like, meaning it's fine for the establishment to sell it, l'chachila, but in terms of being a representative of the buyer is like, I want that one. I don't want this one. I don't want to deal with that. I think Rabbi Eisenman told me. I think I told him the story, and I think the previous year, I think that must have been 2021, because 2020 was the COVID year, and Rabbi Eisenman was still in charge then. So he told me then that somebody called him saying, remember that first Pesach. So there were all these people making Pesach for the first time and stuff. People were supposed to go to their parents, and they weren't going to go to their parents and all these things. So somebody asked him that they made a potato kugel to send to their kids in Lakewood, right? Yeshiva from the yeshiva or something, sounds like. And it was the same thing. And the mother realized after she already baked it that she had canola oil in it instead of cottonseed oil. So she called up Rabbi Eisenman and said, can I send it to them? So the Apia Lacha, they're allowed to eat it. So he said, yeah, you can send it to them. It's mutter to them to eat. So she said, okay, fine, I'll just tell them. He's like, don't tell them. They don't need to know. Why do they need to know? They're not going to be very comfortable eating it if they know, even though it's mutter, they're just not going to be comfortable. So just don't tell them. Right? Why do you need to tell them? So that's a private psak. Right? Would you do the same? So that the same question. Would you then transfer that over now to an establishment sock? And that's where things get a little more iffy. Plus, you know, the more people know, you know, what are the secrets? Whatever. It's just not, you know, plenty of reasons why that might not work on a larger scale. Okay. So, anyways, to bring that back over here. So, when it comes also to kashrus agencies, right? In terms of who you work for and things like that. So, what about the following? There is a halacha, we learned this way, way back when we started learning Yeridaya, that we don't kasher from milchik seflashiks, right? There is a minhag of the Rama not to kasher from milchik seflashiks, right? That is the minhag. So that is a Ashkenazi practice, right? It's only mentioned in the Rama. The Mechaber doesn't mention it. So one of our caterers, who's Sephardi, this is still in the Rabbi Eisenman days, he did like a milchik's party. I remember I was with Rabbi Eisenman visiting him for this, and he had a milchik's party. So Eisenman said, okay, so where'd you get the milchik stuff from? He said, oh no, I got the glass from here, and I kashered all the silverware and used the regular silverware. Eisenman's like, what? Weizmann's like eyes like fell out of his head. Like, what are you talking about, right? He took his fleishik silver. He took his fleishik silverware and kashered it and turned it to milchiks. So Weizmann's like, well, we don't do that. We don't change things over from milchiks to fleishiks. The guy's like, what are you talking about? I'm smarty. He didn't say I'm smarty. He never heard of such a thing, right? And it is mutter for him to do. So how does that work on a policy level for an organization, right? He's allowed to do it, right? There's nothing wrong with him doing it. It's an action that the Rama says Ashkenazim shouldn't do, right? So how exactly do you balance that out? The same thing in Hilchos Shabbos practices, right? There's differences between Ashkenazim and Sephardim with regards to what you're allowed to do in terms of Chazara on Shabbos, you know, how to reheat foods on Shabbos. There's differences between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. So if the guy is a Sephardi, if the caterer is a Sephardi, does that mean he's allowed to do it? Or do we say, I'm sorry, you're doing an Ashkenazi party? But on the other hand, the Chazara practice doesn't really have anything to do with the people there. It has to do with the caterer, right? So do we change things up based on who the caterer is and what their practices are, right? So that's the thought. So when it comes to here, when it comes to challah, what exactly is the lechachila and what is the bidyevet? I mean, what exactly is the issue here? Is it, so when it comes to challah, there's really two aspects to it. You sort of have to break it down and say right? Let's put it this way. Is the mitzvah of challah, is it a mitzvah's ase or is it a mitzvah's lotase?
Wouldn't it be both?
Right. So there's really two issues going on. There is the mitzvah's ase of separating challah, and there's the mitzvah's lotase. What is the mitzvah's lotase? It's not in the mitzvah of challah, really. It's the isser of eating tevel. Right, tevel is stuff that didn't have hafrasha done appropriately. So that's the comparison to truma. So it's not really specifically challah issue, but it's you're eating tevel. Right, so there's really two aspects. Right, there's a positive, there's a mitzvah aspect, and there's a losase aspect. So when it comes to when it comes to something being lechachila and bidyev, so what is applicable to the consumer at that point? Right, is it possible for the consumer to get a mitzvah of eating challah? Of separating challah? Not really, right? It's not his mitzvah, it's the caterer's mitzvah, or it's the owner's mitzvah, or it's the shopkeeper's mitzvah, whatever that is, right? It's not the eater, right? In terms of the eating is the responsibility, right? Is it mutter for him to eat? Yeah, the only thing relevant to the person eating at the restaurant or buying food from the bakery, bread from the bakery, is the lotase, right? He's not getting a mitzvah of eating challah anyways, right? He's only at risk of violating the lotase. So what's the responsibility of the kashrus agency, right? The kashrus agency, we just have to make sure that all the people are eating things that are kosher. So with regards to the person that's eating, they're eating kosher. So perhaps we could just say that our job ends at that point, right? That's it, right? I made sure everybody is kosher, and the whole principle of l'chadchila and b'diavad actually is only applicable to mitzvahs ases, not to mitzvahs los ases. It's actually a Tosfos, a famous Rav Schechter's favorite Tosfos, one of the favorite things to discuss. There's a famous Tosfos in Nida, which I think we came across it in when we learned Hilchos Kalayim, that lotases only. That the principles of l'chachila and b'dieved are only applicable when we're talking about a mitzvah's ase and not a mitzvah's los ase. So I would have just said that. I thought that maybe you could end the discussion sort of there, meaning the lota, with the kashrus agency is responsible to the consumer. The consumer doesn't have to be concerned about l'chachila b'dieved, right? And the owner happens to be mochel, or so to speak, or he's just not fulfilling the mitzvah. He's like, that's just not in his... he's not fulfilling the mitzvah l'chachila. Okay, fine. Like that's beyond the purview of the kashrus organization. So that would have been my like quick answer as to how to justify it once we realize that it's only an issue l'chachila, not an issue b'di'evet. But Rabbi Cohen actually goes on a much longer excursus covering the issue of chit b'shvil sheyaske chaveru. That ladam chet b'shvil sheyiska chaver. So I think the next thing on the page is a Gemara and Shabbos daf dalad. Right? Is that what you got there? So
yes.
Yeah. So the Gemara there is a famous sugya. The Gemara there by the two dots where he says they're gufa, right? About six lines from the top says gufa. Bayi Rav Bibi Barabaye Hidvik pas betanur, hitiru lo lirdoso kodem shiyavu lidichiv chatas, o lo hitiru. Okay, so what are we talking about here? So there's a prohibition on Shabbos of baking, right? When you're putting something in the oven, right, baking something on Shabbos is aser, right? That's one of the malachos, right, number 11. There's a couple of malachos, and baking is one of them, that you have a bit of a problem, because if I take a piece of dough, and the oven is 400 degrees, and I put the piece of dough in the oven, and then I take it out 2 seconds later, right? Have I violated the malacha of baking on Shabbos?
No.
Right? The answer is no. Right? It's not enough for me to... it's not the issue of putting it in the oven. I need to bake it, right? And baking requires it requires a little bit of time over there, right? So then you get, there's a whole lumdish issue of, okay, so once it's there for long enough, do I violate, if I put something in the oven that takes a half hour to bake, I put it in the oven a minute before the end of Shabbos, right? So Shabbos is over when it actually bakes. If I violated the Isser of Shabbos, right, that's good. So, and if you want to say, well, no, it all has to be contained within Shabbos, so what's the very first malacha? The very first malacha is Zoreya, right? Zoreya is planting, right? So if I throw a seed into the ground and I bury it, right? And then I go back on Monday and I take the seed out and it still looks exactly the same as it was when I put it in. Did I violate the prohibition of, right? There has to be a way for me to violate the prohibition of Zoreya on Shabbos, right? So how all that works is the thing that you learn about when you learn Masechta Shabbos, not Lamaisa. That's like the Gemara's one of the big lumdish issues on Shabbos. So here the Gemara says the way that they would make bread is that they would take the bread and they would stick it to the walls of the oven, and that's how it would bake. Now, if a guy on Shabbos sticks it to the wall of the oven, is somebody else allowed to come along and take it down? Why would he not? What would be the advantage to him taking it out before it bakes? Right, you're going to save the guy's life. Right, that guy who put it in is, well, here saying chayv chatas, plus he did it by accident or something, or chayv skila, whatever. Right, he violated Shabbos, so I could save him from violating Shabbos. The only problem is that by removing that bread, that is an issue of muksa, right? That bread that's sitting in the oven, right, is not going to be able to be consumed. And the assumption is that I'm doing something wrong. So muksa, maybe somebody should suggest something else. But, right, you're doing something wrong. The Gemara's assumption is you're doing something wrong by taking that bread out. Okay, so that's the Gemara's question here. Bayer of Vivar Abayi, Hidvik Pas Betanur, there's bread stuck to the oven, right? Are you allowed to take it out before it reaches the time of the Chiv Chatas, or not? So the Gemara says, well, what's the case exactly? Yes, they did Bishogeg, right? And he didn't know about it. Right? Why would I? Who am I being matir? Why would I be matir? Elalav the idur of Idkar that he recognized at that point. Right? If he's never going to know about it, so who cares? No, he does recognize it. So it might have to do it. And it goes to this discussion here. But the assumption is actually it comes out being no. The answer is that we don't take it out. That the guy puts it in. So you're not the person walking by afterwards. Does not take it out, right? V'chi omrim la'adam chep ishvil sheyizka chavercha, why do we say a person should sin in order to have another person benefit? No, we don't say that, and therefore you leave it in place. So Tosfos turns around, so Tosfos here on the side, v'chi omrim, brings several gemaras that seem to indicate a different way. The Tosfos here says, but wait a second, there's a gemara in Erevin that seems to be discussing a case very similar to ours, that Rebbe Savar Michale Lechaver Deliavid Isura Kalila V'lo Liavid Am Aretz Isura Rabba, that it's better for somebody to violate an Isser Kal, and another person is not going to violate a stronger Isser. What's the example? So I see Tosus here doesn't spell it out here, but the Gemara in Erevin is discussing a case of somebody who owns a field, a chaver who owns the field, and they sell the land, they sell fruits to an amaretz, right? So that amaretz is now going to be chayiv in trumos u'maisers. right? But however, he doesn't necessarily realize that he's chayiv in Shrimus u'Maisros. So do we tell the Chacham, whose stuff now is belonging to the people who bought it, the Am Haaretz, do we tell him to declare truma from that stuff off of the stuff that was left behind? Meaning, should you, essentially, what we're saying, be mafresh truma shalom min hamukaf? Right? Should I use, right? So the Tosa's assumption is that, well, you're doing something wrong, but you're doing it for the benefit of somebody else. And the Gemara seems to say that it's okay. Right, so that's the Gemara. That's Tosus's question here, right? That my page somehow turned here. Okay, there. Right. V'lo li'avid amaretz li'sura rabba. So why should that be? Rabbi Sover Nichli. Right there, he says. Rabbi says no, that you should l'chaver for the chaver to do it to be mafresh chumar u'maiser. D'li'avid is that he's doing an iser kal, a light iser, and in order to save the amaretz from an iser rabba, from a significant iser. So Tosos actually gives three answers to this. I mean, we will do the answers quickly and see how it's applicable. We'll save that for next week. So answer number one, he says, Hasam kidei shelo yochal am aretz tevel al yada. He says, no, there's a big difference, right? When it comes to the case in Shabbos, right, who violates the Isser, right? The guy who put the stuff in the oven, right? Who did the action to cause the Isser? The guy who put the stuff in the oven, right? So the same guy who causes the Isser is the guy who is violating the Isser, and now you're a different person, right? However, when it comes to the case in Erevin, right, the guy causing the Isser is the Chaver, right? Is that guy, right? The Talmud Chacham, he's the one causing the Isser. Because the guy doesn't realize that he has to take off Trumas and Isers. So therefore it's in his interest to violate the Isser because he would be the one that would be in trouble. So that's answer number one. Answer number two is here from the Riva that he says even when he himself stuck it on, in Lifshut Misham, Lahatir the Hasam Adayan Lo Nasa Isser Umutav Shiyasa Isser Kal, Lo Yasa Isser Chamar Al Yado. Avalhacha Hamaisa Shal Isser Kfar Nasa. He says, when it comes over there to the case of the Trumus u'Maisros, so when is the Isser going to be violated? It's going to be violated later on, right? So you have something to do now in order to save the guy from violating an Isser later on. As opposed to the case in Shabbos, when was the Isser violated? The Isser was already violated previously when the guy took the dough and stuck it into the oven. So it happened already. Now I could save him by sort of undermining the Isser, but still, timing-wise, it's not the same thing. And then one more answer that he has there, which is very similar, later, about six lines before it becomes wide, says, V'od yeish lomar, the dafka heichad the pasha ka'amar, v'chi omrim lo l'adam chayt k'day, v'asi shapir had, that it's only where he would be a poshea, right, where he would be totally, right, he has no clue, the Trumus u'Maisros guy, right, there, the guy has no idea that there's going to be an Isser, so it would be totally by accident. As opposed to this case in Shabbos, where the guy was a shogeg, he wasn't a poshea. He'd be a poshea, he wouldn't be chayv achatas, right? So therefore, he was a shogeg, not a poshea. So those are all three differences. There's a bunch of other cases that are out there that seem to work around this issue of chayt yishvil shetiska chaver, doing something wrong in order to save. So then you got to figure out how he paskin, and then figure out if that's what's going on in this case as well, right? So that's what Rabbi Cohn's in his sefer. That's what his suggestion is. That's what's going on here. Meaning we're telling the owner. The Jewish owner of this place that's Chayv and Chala, we're saying, all right, you'll do what you do, meaning you should take off Chala, but if you're not going to do it, it's still in our interest to do Chala in a bidi-evid way in order to save other people from violating an Isser. Now, it's a little unclear. Why would they violate an Isser? We just don't give the Hashkacha, right? So, all right. The musician will save that for next week. All right.
Where's it off? I'm ready.
Okay.